Blog Talk Radio.
I'm a bonehead. That makes it pretty easy. Tornado Tony Fennecal.
And now you know who we be. But I just wanted to start off the show by letting everybody know we're going to be talking to Joey Minnesota Ice Abel, who has quite an interesting record. A lot of early knockouts to his credit. And has only had one decision win. 10-round decision. Everyone else was a stoppage. So that's out of 26 fights. 25 KOs, lost four times, only been knocked out twice. And he's got a fight coming up with Aaron Lyons on the 17th.
That's a rematch, isn't it? Isn't Lyons one of the... Either Lyons beat him by a stoppage, or they fought before.
Yes, that was his very first loss, a TKO
first round.
It was a stoppage loss,
I remember that. Yeah, the Blue Horizon. I didn't go to that one, but I went to his very next fight after that.
Okay.
And I saw Lyons fight a guy named Dave Brunelli, and that was a pretty good fight. Brunelli beat him. But I actually have a little tidbit about Joey Minnesota Ice Abel, and you'll get two little tidbits, actually, Rich. First, Joey Abel was one of the first fighters I covered when I did when I just started with you back in 07. I went to a fight card down the Blue Horizon, and you know, Joey Abel's on the card. I'm trying to remember the name of the guy he fought. He knocked him out of the ring, actually, and the guy hurt his arm, and then he was bitching about Joey Abel's kicking his ass. And he knocked the guy out of the ring, and like the guy hurt his arm, and he's trying to say he got pushed out of the ring. Doesn't matter. Well, yeah, what pushed him out of the ring was a big left hand. And then the guy was getting in Abel's face after it was over, like, and he's like, I want a rematch. He's like, dude, you're getting your ass kicked the whole fight. You know what? You should be lucky it's over and you're leaving with your head on your shoulders.
Right.
That was one thing from Joey Abel that I remember. The other one, Rich, you got a kick out of this. And I know you're not, you know, really, you know, being from Massachusetts, I'm sure you don't know about this. But a couple years ago in Philadelphia, we had a rash. It was like, I think it was 2008 going into 2009 where,
everybody in
Philadelphia had a rash. But there was a couple instances where, a couple police officers were killed in, shootouts. And the trial just started a week ago, and it was three guys involved in it. They robbed a bank. They were dressed as Muslim women with, like, the whole face veils and everything, and they robbed the bank, and the one police officer was chasing them. They opened fire on him. They killed him. The gunman was killed, and the other two guys are now, the trial is just starting. Like, I think like a week ago they were doing, like, jury selection or something like that. And, well, the one fighter, the one guy that's in jail, that's on trial, his name's LaVon Warner. Well, he was a former Philadelphia fighter that was actually working construction and was on a few jobs with my dad. My dad had lunch with the guy a couple times, and the guy had just retired. His last fight was a one-round knockout loss to Joey Abel. And he's trying to say that brain damage that he got during his fighting career left him, you know, unable to make decisions, and that's why, you know, he ended up, you know, being part of this crime and this murder of the police officer.
That's ridiculous.
But, yeah, that's
his defense. Benji Johnson fight for their innocence down there in Texas the legitimate way, you know, fucking guy like him going to that depth saying that it's boxing made me dumb. Come on.
Yeah. Boxing says, you know, like, I don't know if he's saying it, but I know his lawyer is trying to say, you know, the brain damage he got during his fight career left him unable to make decisions and, left him vulnerable to the influence of these other two guys.
I'd be like, so, did you have to make decisions every day when you were on the construction site?
Yeah, right. You know, no shit.
Oh, you did? Oh, okay. So you can make those decisions, but you couldn't make the right decisions not to get involved in robbery and murder.
Murder, yeah. Because, I mean, even though neither of them were the gunmen, if convicted, I know the DA is going for life. Not life, I'm sorry, death penalty.
Whoa.
Which basically is life, because they don't execute people anymore. Now, Rich, when I become president in 2012, and I know you're voting for me, I'm bringing back the death penalty. I mean, you do anything wrong, I'm hanging your ass. And none of this lethal injection shit either. I'm decapitating.
I had lunch with a Secret Service agent the other day who was on Obama's campaign.
Well, tell them, well, good, and then maybe I'll hire them to be my Secret Service agents while I'm the president.
All right. Well, that's going to be interesting. Well, we should have a little freaking Law and Order tone in the background, shouldn't we?
You know when you get me on the line. You know I'm always ornery.
But speaking of that Reggie Johnson case, I got a few questions out to Reggie that once I get answered, then I'm going to be able to write a nice proposal for SportsIllustrated.com, SI.com now, I guess, and really do a nice write-up on it. I got half of it from Patrick already. Patrick McGilligan already wrote kind of the historical points of it. And basically, you know, Reggie's claiming that he intended to hold the camp in 2008. That's the subject of this whole criminal thing. And he's actually being charged with everything from theft to organized crime in this case. So, first and foremost, he needs a lawyer. He's in the Harris County Jail there. It's all Harris County, Houston, Texas. So if you're in that area and you want to represent a guy who's built a great career for himself and for all intents and purposes, to this point, he's been known as an upstanding citizen. You know, and every news article about this case has been very vague. I've seen most of them. And, if anything, he needs a good lawyer, and this should be a civil case, I think, based on my examination. But we're still working on it. We're still digging some stuff up, and when we do get the undisputed facts, we're going to publish them. So, one way or another, whether it's in Sports Illustrated or on our website. So I just want to kick that out there. And, you know, Reggie, if you're listening somehow, we're pushing for you. But, you know, we're still on track of that story. And one guy that was mentioned in that historical perspective by Patrick McElliott was a guy named Mike Tyson. I don't know if you remember that guy. Do you, Tony?
What was the name again?
Mike Tyson.
Never heard of him.
Had a bunch of knockouts, I guess, back in the day.
Yeah, he had a knockout like a year or two ago. He knocked out some fat guy in a movie.
Hey, no, he knocked out a paparazzi, I think. Or smacked him around.
Knocked out a few telephone poles, probably a few windows. Robin Givens, her mother, you know, just a few people in general.
But he's done. He's done with fighting now. I don't know if you heard the latest or read the blog today, but we had a report.
Did you say he's done with biting?
He's done with fighting, period. He doesn't want to be a trainer. He doesn't want to fight again. He wants to help sick kids. And I got to read this.
What is he done with biting?
What is he done with fighting?
Yeah, not fighting. Not fighting with an F. Biting with a B.
Oh, is he done with biting? I don't know. But the story is called Mike Tyson Hangs Up the Boxing Gloves in Exchange for a Life of Ease, and it's posted it today on the blog. Cool boxing links.
Hey, you know, Mike, whatever floats your boat, dude.
But the funny quote is, though, for the record, if I was a sick child, the last thing I'd want to see leering down at me with a bowl of chicken noodle soup and a thermometer is Tyson's tattooed mug.
I can't understand why.
If that ever happened, he'd also need to bring a mop to make me comfortable, if you know what I mean.
So the
thing from Mike Tyson, the actual quote I wanted to read here is, overall I'm in good shape, but my state of health prevents me from engaging in boxing. I used alcohol, drugs, but I've done away with all those bad habits, and right now I'm trying to strengthen whatever is left. I don't want to be a trainer. For this, you need a special gift. It is unlikely that this will happen. He also says, I do not consider myself a superstar. I just live. Today I consider it an achievement to help sick children. This is what I have really achieved in life. Everything that came before this point, this no longer has any significance. He's the artist formerly known as Mike Tyson, according to boxing.
You know what? I just realized something. It was little Mikey's birthday last week. Now, Rich, I'm gonna give you a question here, and I want you to, you know, turn back the time clocks, just like I'm going to, and I'm like, just like anybody else that's in the show is going to. Mike Tyson last week just turned 44 years old. He was born June 30th, 1966. Who would have thought 27 years ago he would have lived to even seeing his 40s? Now, that's an unfair question. Everybody's always saying it. Mike Tyson's never going to see 40. Mike Tyson's never. He's either going to get murdered, or OD, or whatever happened. But Mike Tyson will never see 40. Well, people, he made it. He made it for 4 years.
He's definitely grown up, and he's being honest with himself. And he's...
Oh yeah, I mean, you gotta commend the guy that wants to now help children. When 10 years ago he wanted to actually eat children.
Help children, yes. No, sick children.
I'm sorry, I got my horrible one-liners going tonight. I'm in one of my typical ornery moods. People are pissing me off, you know. So.
Oh shit! It was 103 in Philadelphia the other day. I heard.
Yes, it was. It was a little warm out here. That was the day that the air conditioner conked out at work. But, hey, you know what? The heat really doesn't bother me too much. Because you figure I'm a guy in my spare time. I'll sit in a 150-degree sauna and do that for fun. I'm a guy that used to live in the sauna when I was in college because I was joking around with some friends here. That I was always the extreme when I was fighting in Lock Haven. It was either I had to cut weight, or I was too late and I had to weigh in with rocks in my pocket. It was always, Tony, what are you weighing today? I'm like, 183. You think you can get to 190, within an hour? Yeah, I'd give it a shot. Tony, what are you weighing? Weighing 180, Coach. Do you think you can you think you can get to 165 by Friday? Absolutely. Let's do it. So,
Well, I tell you, I mean, it's been easy for me to lose weight even with the busted ankle. I just freaking sweat my rear end off.
How's the arnica working? Is the arnica working?
I didn't get it yet. It's been getting here by, like, train and bus, I think. I don't know. I just picked the cheapest shipping, so I didn't even get the stuff
Maybe
yet.
Somebody's walking it to you.
But I'm actually, I'm kind of lipping on it. I bowled on it the other night. It was, like, physical therapy, so. And I actually beat my buddy from the Secret Service, so. I'm not going to reveal his name because God can kill you.
Nice. I'm telling you, we should hire him when I'm president.
He told me a funny story. He said he does the Nigerian scams all the time, you know? Of course, we all know what those are, but if you don't know for some reason, you know, you get an email from somebody from a Yahoo address saying they're from a Nigerian bank and they want to give you $20 billion because in your family
in bank,
or because they feel like it, or because you won the Yahoo lottery. I mean, whatever it is, they'll do it. And they'll try to get somebody to give them money. And my buddy told me, he goes, yeah, I have to tell one guy who put $1.2 million up that, you know, that money's gone. So that was one of one of his most interesting stories about working for the Secret Service, I think. But that actually somebody falls for that. That sucks. You know, somebody with $1.2 million. I mean, think about how much we could do with that money. And this guy gave it to a bunch of Nigerian scamsters.
I know. Isn't that great?
Mm-hmm. Who probably just bought guns for the
scam. Pull on the mic, scam.
Rough. Anyway. We have
Hold on, Rich.
Rich,
you got a problem.
What's the problem?
Stop being too quiet in your mumbling.
Mumbling? Who said that?
That's what our groupie is saying right now, that your Rich is always a little too quiet. I can barely hear him mumble.
I don't understand that because I have the microphone right up to my mouth when I talk. And
you,
your speaker
you need to enunciate.
Like 10 miles away. Maybe I need
you to need to enunciate. You can enunciate, you'll be fine.
Maybe if I put the microphone a little further.
I'm a very loud person. Like, I'm at work, they're like, oh, you seem like you're so quiet and, you know, soft-spoken. I'm like, yeah, get me outside of work. Or no, they're going to see you tomorrow, because I'm already in a bad mood when I left today. So if any of my coworkers are listening, F5 Tornado is hitting the office tomorrow, so you better just shut the fuck up.
All right, well. Nice and loud and clear, I'm going to talk about this next story, which we've been kind of going back and forth on because we didn't know the real story. But now it's official. This guy, War Machine, who we've talked about before, his real name is John Paul Copenhaver. He's 28 years old. He's going to serve a year in jail after he pled guilty to two felonies and violating his probation. The sentencing is a result of a bar fight he was involved in last March in a 2007 felony assault case, which was later reduced to a misdemeanor. War Machine is now his legal name. He's debuted as an adult performer in Digital Playground's yet-to-be-released Riley Steele Loves War Machine feature. And this guy was the one that was involved in that supposed publicity incident. This isn't related to the sentencing, I don't think. So we heard it was a setup, you know, a publicity stunt. We heard he was being sought for his arrest for this. I don't know what the real story is, but I guess this is supposedly, you know, somewhat involved. But he was arrested last March after brawls with bouncers outside Thruster's Lounge in Point Loma. So maybe it was related to his porn career. But we brought this up when he first went over and decided to change businesses, and then like 2 weeks later, lo and behold, he gets in a fight. So it was just kind of a funny, wacky story, but this is even crazier. It was reported that after the altercation with police, after the Thruster's Lounge fight, he ran from the scene, he was apprehended, and had a spit bag put over his head, indicating that he was getting aggressive with oral fluids. And he was also involved in a scuffle with a female bartender at Last Day Cocktails in February after she questioned his War Machine ID. But get this. Now, Tony, this is the best. I mean, how about a judge that lets you have your last fight right before you go to jail?
That's kind of nice.
Right?
Why not, you know?
Scheduled for July 9th, and the San Diego Superior Court judge gave him a July 16th surrender date to be booked and begin his sentence. And if he doesn't show up, then he's getting 5 years. So I think War Machine is going to be a peace machine for a little while. Unless he gets into some wars with the other prisoners, which could be a possibility, you know. We'll see. We might have him in isolation. He's a dangerous weapon. All right. And he actually made his name, I didn't know this, after his appearance on the UFC's Ultimate Fighter reality show in 2007. I don't know if I was following it back then or watching those episodes, but it's kind of funny. Considering the antics in the Ultimate Fighter house, maybe he'll sue them when he gets out and say they did it to him. But speaking of wackos in MMA, I found this story just kind of off the cuff. This guy wrote about, you know, a few idiots giving MMA a bad name. And I never heard this, but this is like mayhem and murder in MMA mixing together here. And I'm just going to read this little snippet. But this guy, Wyatt, what's his name? Jared Wyatt. He's an extremely disturbed man whose murder charge was upheld by a California judge last month. It has been reported that Wyatt was under the influence of psychedelic drugs when he allegedly cut the heart out of his victim's chest, cut off the tongue, and removed a majority of the face. And the victim was his sparring partner.
And his
professional record is listed at 1-0. Translation, it appears Wyatt has more Hannibal Lecter in him than any traits of an MMA champion. So this guy says MMA has its own demons to slay. I don't know. That sounds kind of weird news, but that's as weird as you get, I guess, in MMA. But he's only 1-0, so he's not really like, you know, a hugely widely known professional or anything. So I guess that's a good sign. But, I read that. I said, I got to read that on this show. But I started to do these combat sports links and boxing and wrestling and MMA links again, so check all those out. There's a whole bunch of good ones there. We had an article posted on Goody Petronelli and Kevin McBride still working together after all these years. And Kevin McBride, we tried to get him on tonight, but looks like he's unavailable. And he's going to be fighting this Saturday. Even though Tyson is out of the picture, the last guy who really gave him a beating is back. He's making his comeback, so it's a big story.
Kevin McBride, the Clone Colossus, right?
What?
The Clone Colossus.
The Colossus, yes.
Boxing. That was his name, the Clone Colossus.
And last time I saw him up at Goody's was probably about a year ago, a little more than a year ago now. And he still had a little bit of gut on him, but I don't know what he's been doing since then. I've seen him up there a few times doing the mitts with Goody, so I know Goody ain't lying. He's still working with him. You know, he's got a little kid now, and I've heard the buzz about town in Dorchester where he lives is that he hangs out at the bakery a little too much, but maybe that's changed too if he's back in training. We'll see. I don't know if it's going to be published on TV, broadcast on TV, but we'll hear about the fight, and we'll try to get him on next week. And hopefully he can put those rumors to rest about his eating habits, I guess. We'll see. But there's a bunch of stories in the news this week, Tony. I know you're not going to want to hear this, but that boxing is on the ropes, and MMA is back.
Let me get my gloves on, because it's time for me to stand up and defend.
What say you? There's two stories in the last two links on the blog, the links, like boxing and MMA links and combat sports links. One is called Boxing Losing Battle with MMA, and the other one is, let's see here, Boxing is on the ropes as MMA becomes the number one contender. And I have a few points to support boxing, but I'd like to give you the floor for now on this subject.
Okay. I appreciate that, Rick. And, Rich, I'm not going to say anything that I haven't said before. I'm not going to say anything that I'm not going to come up with any new arguments or anything that's whirlwind like a tornado. But, okay. Here's what I got to say about, you know, this. I'm always going to take the boxing side, and you know that. Yeah, and, okay, they'll say, okay, boxing's on the ropes. There's no mega fight. There's no mega stars. You know what? Granted, there isn't a guy right now like a Tyson or a Holyfield or even an Oscar De La Hoya, or somebody that or Muhammad Ali or Sugar Ray Leonard or Joe Lewis or Rocky Marciano. Those are guys that, like, the sport really built around those guys. When De La Hoya retired a few years ago, yeah, that hurt the marquee of the sport. But actually, De La Hoya is still helping the sport with Golden Boy Promotions. Because you look at it one way. Guys that didn't want to deal with Don King, guys that didn't want to deal with Bob Arum, a lot of them, with De La Hoya getting in the mix, and with him, you know, really bringing a fresh new perspective in the promotional side of it, a lot of guys were like, you know what, okay, fights can be made now. Fights that you never would have seen 7 or 10 years ago, fights like De La Hoya Pacquiao or Mosley Mayweather. You never would have seen that because everybody would have been, nope, one guy's with King, one guy's with Arum, and they're not going to fight. And I think with the onset of MMA, that kind of forced guys to work the deal with each other a little bit to make the big fight.
Oh, slow down for a second. We have to put something in context there since you're speaking about Don King. Don King also won a battle in the MMA versus boxing debate because he wouldn't let Ricardo Mayorga compete in MMA. He said no, and the judge agreed with him that his safety would be in jeopardy if he went into MMA. So that's kind of an interesting angle, too. I wanted to throw in.
Well, but you gotta understand, it's two different sports. You know, you take a guy like Michael Jordan, probably the greatest basketball player to ever live, couldn't make it out of minor league baseball. He couldn't hit a curveball. It's a different sport. People say, well, it's a combat sport. Yeah, some boxing might get employed in MMA, but you watch the guys that even strictly are stand-up hand fighters. They do not box as well as a trained boxer boxes. A guy that is a traditional boxer, even if he's more of like a mauling, brawling type of fighter like a Mayorga was, is never going to be a great MMA fighter because he doesn't do the takedowns and, you know, the grappling moves. So, but they're saying, okay, boxing's a dying sport. I'm telling you, you put an MMA card on pay-per-view versus a boxing card on pay-per-view, top-notch versus top-notch, who usually wins on the buys? I remember last year there was a head-to-head one. It was Mayweather and Marquez. And I forget who the MMA card was, but Dana White was on one of his rants spewing how the Mayweather fight was going to be garbage and the MMA fight was going to be the greatest thing ever. And what happened was the MMA fight, first of all, sucked. And second of all, the buy rate was completely slanted in the favor of the boxing match, Mayweather versus Marquez. They didn't even want to put a box or an MMA card that they had the big UFC, whatever it was, against Pacquiao Cotto, because they knew they were going to get blown out of the water. So they put it on free TV. They put it on Spike. So, first of all, boxing's not dying. You go down to a fight in Atlantic City, and you see, Kelly Pavlik was fighting down there recently, filling the place up. He was not on the same level as Arturo Gatti was in it. Gatti could fight his own mother down there. May he rest in peace. So it's coming up on 2 years, or it's coming up on a year. May he rest in peace. Gatti could fight his own mother down there, would sell out the place. I go to a lot of these local cards, and you know what? They are always sold out. And people say, well, it's always the older people that like boxing. Nah. I've gone to cards, and I've seen girls there. Right, Double T? I've seen kids there. I've seen, older people there. I've seen younger people bullshitting, talking to each other, joking around. The sport of boxing is not dying. Okay, right now, they're in a little bit of a lull. They haven't had a lot of big HBO fights. They've had some cards on Showtime. They haven't had a big pay-per-view card since the Mosley Mayweather fight. Doesn't mean it's a dying sport. Dana White throws these MMA cards out there every 2 weeks, and you know what? That's what's going to kill it. When you get the same guys fighting and over and over and over, and you can't differentiate any of them because, see, Dana White thinks he is the star of his own promotion. And Rich, you and I said this a few weeks ago, the guy's never even been in the ring or the octagon. He thinks he is the biggest star of his own organization.
Or training, whatever he was. and then he became a manager of Tito Ortiz and Chuck Liddell, and that was the end of it. And you know, the whole Giants thing. Of course, I've switched to a new server, and I've been watching the search terms. And the original founder of Giants, Russell Pike, is like number 3 or 4 search term still to this day. I couldn't believe it. And Fight News is up there, of course, is number 1, all is one word. But Fight News with a space between it doesn't come in until number 4 in the search terms. And Zions is number 3. So we're still known for that shit. It's kind of interesting. But there's so much more to come. I've been kind of putting my foot in the water with that again. No pun intended, with my broken ankle. I've been putting a lot of stuff out there about it, and I just, speaking of the links, the combat sports links, I just put up a story the other day about UFC 116 payout information released, and I think this is another story I think coming, will kind of put the lid on the fastest growing sport in the world idea. But here's some of the payout information. This is like one of the biggest cards they've had in a while. You said you watched it, but Lesnar versus Carwin. I watched it for free.
That's the main event.
That tells you about the buyout rates. But anyway, Brock Lesnar. Guess how much he got for his victory?
$1.5 million.
No. Not even close.
I was a guess. I'm sorry.
$400,000.
Are you kidding me?
That's it. With no bonus there. But he did get the submission of the night, I think. $75,000. 6 fighters, yeah. He got the submission of the night. So he got $475,000 total, I think, if I'm reading that correctly. This is all according to a Bleacher Report contributor, so I'm just trusting it on faith here. But anyway, Shane Carwin supposedly got $40,000, according to the UFC numbers. $40,000 to $475,000. I don't know how
that's made. That's the main event for pay-per-view card. Now, here's a problem I have, and it comes on a couple different levels, Rich. Now, when you have these pay-per-view boxing cards, they usually air 3 to 4 fights. Okay, now let me go back to the most recent one, Mayweather-Mosley, okay? Now, those guys were making in excess, and probably even more than I'm going to say. I think Mosley got in like the range of like $4 to $5 million. I think Mayweather got more than $10 million. I could be wrong, but I know obviously Mayweather made more. And there was, you know, 3 other televised fights. I'm sure those guys all got around 6 figures, maybe a little bit less, maybe a little bit more. Then there was, 4 or 5 fights that were on the undercard that were not televised. And I'm sure those guys didn't make great paydays, but they made a couple $1,000s. Okay?
Wow. I think it's so funny because, that was the number 1 fight, right? Guess
right.
How much the highest paid guy made underneath Brock Lesnar for that whole whole card? Chris.
Aside from the main event?
Aside from the main
event. Probably made $15,000.
Chris Leben made $86,000. Nobody else
really?
For $100,000. Chris Leben fought 3 weeks before this fight that he just won. And he got $86,000 with a $43,000 win bonus. And I believe he also lobbied for it. He said to Dana, fight of the night or something like that, right after his fight with Joe Rogan. So.
I never understood that. First of all, I think Joe Rogan's an idiot. And you know how I feel about Dana White. But I never understood the fight of the night, submission of the night, knockout. I never understood that shit because I watch these boxing matches and nobody ever says that. I never knew they got bonuses for this. But see, here's my big contention against MMA or UFC that I don't like. Dana White and Joe Rogan portray themselves to be the bigger stars of the show. Dana White reminds me of like a 1980s Vince McMahon. He seriously does. Because in the 80s, when McMahon was really like exploding and taking over like the wrestling industry, what was happening is like, okay, the other regional territories are drying up, and he was taking all the big talent. So if you wanted to make money, you had to come with him. And he was basically blackballing guys. You know, if somebody did something he didn't like, he blackballed them. He got them right out of the picture, and they basically screwed him. He put himself and his organization into being the biggest show. And then he started putting all these pay-per-views out there, and everything got watered down. Okay? So now, basically, Dana White's trying to eliminate the competition, but what's going to happen is there's going to be no competition, everything's going to get stale, and that's how you're going to not make money. So, I mean, the guy just is an egotistical jackass as far as I'm concerned. So let me go back to this UFC card. Now, I really didn't pay attention to any of the fights aside from the main event. I watched a little bit here. Okay, this guy's rolling around. Okay, this guy's trying to punch. Everybody's getting into it. You know, these guys are, you know, lots of, they're not big fans. I mean, they invited me over to their house. I went. And they're like talking like strategy and all this. I really couldn't get into it. Now, the main event came on, and I am a Brock Lesnar fan because, I mean, I read about him in Hunt magazines, and that's pretty cool. And, yeah, I followed him since he was in the WWE, and he tried to break into his
liking.
And I just liked the guy just because of his work ethic, you know. What?
You still watch wrestling?
Absolutely. I mean, it sucks right now, but I still watch it.
Write some wrestling articles for us. We need some wrestling.
What?
You should write some wrestling articles for us.
What, who's like the greatest WWE champion of all time?
I don't know, whatever.
I could do that.
All right.
But going back, it's too much of like a promotion where you have too many pay-per-views. And to me, it drives. Like every 2 weeks, I'm a boxing fan, right? Now, every 2 weeks, I would not be paying for a boxing pay-per-view. I'm sorry, not happening. You know, I can't do this. You get one like every few months, get a good one here and there. Yeah, I'll pay for that. You know, I'm more of a guy like I like quality over quantity. And I think what UFC is trying to jam down our throats to try to fatten their backpack, if you get all these buys that Dana White professes he gets, all these thousands of buys, it's the greatest sport ever, and it's the biggest growing sport ever. So all these thousands and millions of people are watching it. Why are the fighters only getting, the top guy only getting $400,000? If a guy like Floyd Mayweather and Shane Mosley can get $5 to $10 million each, and yet you're getting more buys than they're getting, and you have more sponsors than they get, where is the rest of that money going? Let me take a guess. In Dana's pocket. Thank you. There's my argument.
Yeah, I mean, Dana White is a scumbag, as we all know. A lot of people flame him, as they say, on the forums and comments on stories about the UFC. And we purposely avoid a lot of UFC news and putting the spotlight on them on our blog, specifically because we know who runs it and how they run it. And I've really been disgraced by some of the payouts that these fighters have received. And to further that point, and I do have one other sideline too to come, but here's a guy, Seth Petruzzelli, we talked about last week. He was coming back in action since he beat Kimbo Slice and had a fabulous fight. I mean, this should have been fight of the night for both guys. They both should have got checks for their performance in this fight. Romero, give him credit, won the fight, got a $16,000 payday, but Petruzzelli was the one that was injured and put on the fight of his life before that and just kind of got caught in a lucky submission after Romero finally got his way on the ground. But Petruzzelli was just having the boxing performance of his life, coming at him with all kinds of weird angles and uppercuts that you couldn't believe, and just pummeling the guy. But he just weathered the storm, and he came back, and you know, it was a long fight, and Petruzzelli, I mean, definitely ruined his arm with some kind of armbar type of submission this guy put on him. And he gets $10,000. I mean, is that even going to cover his expenses after he goes to the hospital and has to go home and be laid up with a cast on or something? It's just ridiculous that these guys get shafted like that. $10,000 for a fight like that just doesn't make any sense, you know. And a lot of guys got paid $10,000. Chris Lytle, one of our guys that we interviewed way back when, he got $52,000, but his opponent, who also had a pretty good fight till he got submitted, I believe, and had Lytle in a tight submission at one point, and we thought Lytle was going to be tapped out, but Brown only got $10,000 for his fight. Guy who put on the fight of his life against Stephen Bonner and almost beat him, only to have Bonner just come back with his American Psycho nickname full effect. He won $50,000. Which included a $25,000 win bonus, and his opponent, Sosninski, got $10,000. It's just unbelievable. These guys get so little money to fight on these main event cards, you know. And boxers, I don't have the payouts in front of me, but I guarantee you main events almost anywhere. If there's a belt on the line, especially like Brock Lesnar, you know, his belt was on the line. So I understand why he gets paid the big money. But, you know, even if a belt's not on the line, some of these guys that are top contenders and have the records that they do, if they had the same records in boxing, they'd be getting paid way more for a card like that. Just on the proceeds from the door, they should be getting paid more than that. And I think that all goes to show you how far behind the UFC is. And the other, it's not really a story. I know I said before there's two stories, one other story, but it's more like a reality. That you have, actually, it kind of is a story because New York just put the kibosh on MMA. So that's another one of those links that's on the blog there. But the basic point I was going to make is MMA is not sanctioned in every state. I mean, is there a state that boxing isn't sanctioned in? I don't think so.
Yeah, not
all over the world,
it's
famous. You know, people in Mexico, I don't think, aren't watching the UFC like crazy, but they are watching boxing.
Yeah. You know what, Kyron? There's a couple things that annoy me a little bit about boxing. Not about boxing, per se, but about the coverage of it. And I'm going to bring up three quick things. One is, this got actually mentioned on a YouTube video I posted when Tuesday Night Fights was taken off the air back in 1998, because I love Tuesday Night Fights with the knockout of the night. And it was the power punch of the night, and Sean O'Grady, and Al Alvarez. It used to be great. I mean, I loved it. And so it got taken off the air. Well, they did a video, and I had that show on tape, so I posted a video on YouTube, and that's a good little, you know, 2 or 3 minute video. And someone even asked me, they said, man, USA sucks anymore. Why wouldn't another network pick it up? And it's a great question because, I mean, USA's Tuesday Night Fights always had great ratings. What is killing Friday Night Fights on ESPN now tomorrow night? We got my good friend Hammer and Hank Lundy on the card. I'm actually going to DVR it because I'm not going to be home. I'm going to tell people, Rich, don't you dare call me and tell me the result of it.
Put Hammer and Hank Lundy up there in the top 10 as well of search terms for our website. So we've been promoting it.
Really? Yeah, well, I mean, Hammer and Hank is, he's been on our show. We got actually two very good fight cards tomorrow night with some local top prospects out of Philadelphia. We got Hammer and Hank Lundy fighting up in Providence, Rhode Island. He's a CES fighter. So we got that one going on. He's fighting John Molina Jr. So that's a very top-ranked fight. Then we got another kid out of Philly, Mike Jones, who I've been watching since he pretty much started, and he was 2 or 3-0, and now he's a ranked contender. He's number 2 in the WBO. So, I mean, they're saying he's getting close. You know, he keeps winning. He's actually getting close to getting a world title shot. So we'll talk about them a little bit later. I'll have you bring them up on BoxRec because
well,
it's in my computer.
I did put out a blog just before the show that said that I would open up the phone lines as if we'll ever have a caller. I don't know. We're going to have to see. We'll find out. I put the number up there, and I just read it out there for those that are listening, if I can find the page. Looking for the Law and Order thing. Blog Talk Radio. Here we go. The number is 347-324-3228 if you want to call in and weigh in on the issue of MMA versus boxing, whether you want to stand up for the fastest growing sport in the world label, or you want to shoot it down, whatever, or you want to support boxing and, you know, call MMA.
And get on my good side, support boxing.
Fighting. you do, call us and weigh in, and I'll be watching the switchboard here, see if we get any.
But like I said, Rich, I'm pretty sure that like these fights that the one fight in Atlantic City with Mike Jones and the fight on ESPN2 with Hammer and Hank Lundy, I'm sure those guys are going to be bringing in nice little paydays. But as we were going back to this, as we were talking, hey, I'm glad ESPN2 does, you know, boxing coverage, but they've got a few things on there that really, really piss me off. And just give me a minute to vent again. What they do is, first of all, they do a put it on hiatus for a few months. They put it on hiatus during the fall, say from like September, or October to January because they got a lot of college football on, the college basketball season starting, NHL hockey starting, basketball starting. Obviously, you have the very exciting sport of poker. Ooh, I love to watch people play cards. How much fun is that? So they put boxing on hiatus. So you don't have fights for a couple of months. So then when it comes back on, for the first 2 weeks, I usually miss it because I'm like, oh, shit, it's boxing's back on. Didn't even know. That is one thing that pisses me off. Another thing that really annoys me is they'll, like, it's like they'll put it in any time slot to, like, their convenience. Like, tonight we're going to put Friday night fights on at 10 o'clock because we have a 12-year-old girls softball game that the whole world, the whole country needs to watch. So the fight will come on at 10 o'clock. If the softball game goes into extra innings, well, shit, the fight will just start at 10:15 then. A little annoying. The next week it might be on at 8 o'clock because the softball game or the competitive chess match doesn't start until 10:30, so you got to put the boxing on from, say, 8 to 10.
Where there was 5 points scored, can you believe it? It's like the most.
What?
There were 5 points in a soccer game the other day in the world.
I'm sorry. I'm American. I don't watch soccer.
Oh, come on.
You know me. My Degos are out. What do I care?
In Boston the other day, right? Yesterday. Just got back from Boston. And although yesterday we weren't watching the game because it was too early. But I've been having a few drinks at a place with Boston right in the bar name. And they got soccer on both TVs. And it was the Holland game, I guess. Netherlands versus, like, Uruguay. I just couldn't believe there's 5 points scored in the game. That's like a record breaker, I think. Anyway, that's our World Cup discussion.
Yeah, and that's all you'll ever hear me think on. So, now back to my coverage on boxing, and don't interrupt me this time. Okay, ESPN, it doesn't give, you know, prime coverage. Yeah, it gives Friday night fights because they're not consistent enough, they're not consistent with the times. Where I can sit down and say, you know what, it's Friday night, 9 o'clock, the fights are going to be on. It might not be on 1 week, or it might be on at 8, it might be on at 10. I'm an old man. I fall asleep early sometimes anymore if I don't have 12 coffees in me. So that's, you know, there's sometimes I'm like, shit, there was a fight on last week. I couldn't stay up to watch. Plus, I had to be at work at 6 or 7 a.m. So I'm like, shit, I can't stay up to watch this fight, and I wanted to. It was Demetrius Hopkins. He was the nephew of Bernard the Executioner. Whipping Mike Arenudis' ass. Wanted to see it. Didn't have a chance. So those are the two things that really bore me. They don't have it on networks that you're used to, like a Saturday and a Sunday afternoon. That used to be great. You know, you sit down on Saturday, Sunday afternoon, you know, back in the day, because obviously I didn't drink at that time. I would crack down with a nice cold Pepsi Cola and watch me a good fight. Well, my dad chugged about 32 Budweisers. But that's another thing. Like, hey, Saturday afternoons, man, you was like, you know, get some friends over, you know, have a few beers, watch the fights. You know, Tuesday night fights was always great. That way, when the pay-per-view cards came up, you didn't need to have a Floyd Mayweather or a Shane Mosley or an Oscar De La Hoya. Because you know what? Those guys all had to start somewhere. And where did a lot of these guys start? I remember a lot of guys I remember watching on USA's Tuesday night fights in four-rounders. I remember watching Arturo Gatti in four-rounders. Vinny Pazienza when he was first starting out. George Foreman during his comeback. You know, a lot of really good fighters. Your boy Dangerous Dayton Rosenblatt, who ain't too dangerous anymore.
Well,
you know, a lot of great fighters came up through that.
The guy's a douchebag. Anyway, yeah, that's funny. Well, you know, it's kind of crazy, though, because everybody perceives, supposedly, in the media, if they're, you know, some expert in MMA, even though, you know, nobody's truly an expert in MMA these days. It's just evolving so quickly, and there's so much to cover. We can't even get a hold of all the stories in MMA that go through the system each day. But, you know, you got all these people in MMA saying boxing's dying, but
it's
falling off, but in the world, you can't prove that. I mean, because overseas, what they're doing is they've had boxing forever. I mean, before we've had it, probably, you know, back to the Romans.
So what? Yeah, if you look at some of those countries over, like when guys like Calzaghe would fight over in England, or Kessler over in Denmark, or any of the guys fighting over in Germany, whether it's the Klitschko brothers or I don't remember the guy's name anymore, but it was like, these places get filled up. They're filling out actual, like, 60,000-seat stadiums. Ricky Hatton over in England was absolutely unbelievable.
Okay, it's a very good example because they have the prize fighter tournament now. That's they've done it almost every upper weight class, the super middleweights, the cruiserweights, I think they've done the heavyweights. And they're just moving down the list, I think. And they're doing these one-night tournaments. And it was the whole idea of the tournament that supposedly Angelo Dundee was involved in that we talked about way back, years ago, before the site was even really out there big time. We had a discussion about this American version of the show. It was similar rules, but they couldn't agree on the purses and the contracts, you know, because they all had fights coming up. It just couldn't be done. But all these UK promoters got together, and they did it better. You know, they've been sending me stuff through all kinds of channels, and it's like my number one boxing source from the UK, except for Gianluca there, Rio, who gives us the news about Steve Cunningham. He sends me some stuff about some UK boxers every now and then, too, but it's still big over in the UK, and of course it's still big in the United States, but it's maybe not as much on TV, but I'll have to find out from the people at Go Fight Live. I know they typically have more MMA events available, but I know they sell a lot of boxing events, too, on their website. We'll have to see if they can weigh in and tell us if there's more of an internet pay-per-view demand for boxing or MMA for a big card. And we've been working with them. We got all the ads on our site actually support the site now. So supposedly we got a check coming our way. I don't know how big it's going to be. We only had 5 total buys from Go Fight Live, but we got that widget there. And if you see a Go Fight Live thing in the story, and you click on the link or a picture, it goes to our affiliate thing now. So we make money off of it if you order. So order. Joe DeGuardia's Star Boxing is having an event on the 17th on there. And when that gets closer, we'll put something up, of course. But if you see it in the widget, you know, click on it, check it out. Let us know what you think, whatever. But I don't see any callers. So what I'm going to do is just launch right into the other fights we got coming up before we get Joey Abel on here in a few minutes. Here's a question for the Rain Man, first off. Do you know a female boxer who's fighting in Canada tonight named Brooke Deerdorf would happen to be related to Dan Deerdorf?
What is it, his daughter? I don't know. First I've heard, I've heard of Dan Deerdorf, obviously, but first I've heard of Brooke Deerdorf. Hope she doesn't look like Dan. She's kind of frightening.
Well, she's fighting for the WBC female super featherweight title tonight, so I don't think she looks that much like Dan. At least not in her body type, if it is somebody related to him. And, you know, I have a lot of Bergerons in Canada related to me. One of them is the Montreal mayor candidate. He isn't really related to me, but has the same last name. And, of course, the two hockey players that didn't make it to the finals, the Bergerons, from hockey, not related to me. So I wouldn't be surprised if she's not, but it's kind of interesting. I've never seen that last name in boxing, so except for hearing Dan a few weeks ago when I mentioned to you I sent you that clip from YouTube of Reggie Johnson versus James Toney, Dan Deerdorf was doing the announcing. So he has some connection to boxing. He might be a relative. Well, anyway. We got Mike Jones, as you said, has a big fight. He's 21-0 with 17 knockouts, fighting Irving Garcia in New Jersey tomorrow night. That's the main event for the NABA welterweight title and the NABO welterweight title. Hank Lundy versus John Molina. Of course, that's pretty huge.
Junior. John Molina Jr.
John Molina Jr. And that's for a WBO title. WBO NABO title. Let's see, what else do we have? We got two guys that are undefeated fighting down at the Softball Country Arena. Speaking of softball getting in the way of boxing, Denver, Colorado. And it's Arislandi Lara, who's 11-0 with 6 knockouts, fighting.
He's a heavyweight, ain't he?
William Correa. Or actually, they're not both undefeated. William Correa is 8-3 with 0 ties.
That'd be 8-4 because that Lara is pretty damn good.
He's got 8 knockouts, so all of his wins are by knockout. All of his losses by knockout, too. 3 losses.
Well, he doesn't like to see the judges.
No, he hates judges. We got also on Friday, and I'm surprised they haven't updated this yet, but Verquan Kimbrough is supposed to fight a light welterweight fight. He's 21-3 with 7 knockouts and 3 draws, and he's fighting TBA at the moment. It's pretty tough, if you ask me.
TBA is definitely underrated. He's a tough-ass dude.
Everywhere, too. He fights all the time.
More fights than anybody I've ever seen. He doesn't win too many of them.
I don't find his profile on BoxRec either. No list of statistics.
I wanted to get his autograph.
Right. Anyway, we have a good fight in Guadalajara, Mexico. We have Saul Alvarez, who's 32-0 with 24 knockouts at light middleweight, fighting a 12-round fight with Luciano Leonel Coelho, who's 26-1 with 12 knockouts. And fights like this are why boxing is still alive and well and beating the shit out of MMA, because you can't have these kind of fights in Mexico with MMA. People in Mexico, they're all lightweight, you know?
right, exactly.
Mostly, you know, you don't get anybody over heavyweight most of the time, or over super middleweight if they're Mexican. So they like to see their little guys fight, and the only little guy league is the WEC that's got any popularity right now out there in the U.S. So it's kind of like, you know, it's these other countries, and even Canada's behind the schedule with sanctioning MMA. It's part of the country they don't even allow it, so.
If I'm not mistaken, he fought on the Mosley Mayweather undercard and made a very good showing for himself.
And the fights are not getting made in the United States, you know, and people aren't noticing it because aren't noticing boxing is still superior because they see these big, huge pound for pound guys going at it. You know, sometimes it's happening in Mexico, we just don't know. There's one in Puerto Rico. Here's another example, foreign guys. This is a great card on Saturday.
Oh, Puerto Rico is a very knowledgeable boxing fan.
Juan Manuel Lopez, 28-0 with 25 knockouts, fighting Bernabe Concepcion, 28-3 with 15 knockouts and 1 draw. And we have a super flyweight fight. That's for the WBO featherweight title, by the way. Super flyweight fight between none other than Nonito Donaire, 23-1 with 15 knockouts, and Hernan Marquez, who's 27-1 with 20 knockouts. And we also have bantamweight fights between Jonathan Oquendo, 18-2 with 11 knockouts, and Eden Sonsona, 21-5 with 7 knockouts on that card. That's in San Juan, Puerto Rico.
Well, like I said, they have a lot of great fights down in San Juan. They've had some televised by HBO, some by Showtime.
That's
is always, you know, I mean, the fans really get into it. And, you know, I wouldn't mind going to see a fight down there sometime. I just wear, like, a Puerto Rican flag headband. I got to get the pants for a Puerto Rican. So I won't get, like, jumped down there. As long as I don't wear anything with Bernard Hopkins on it, I should be fine.
All right. Well, we have...
They live in Puerto Rico still. You know that, right?
Yeah. I knew a lot of Puerto Rican women when I used to work with strippers. And it's true what they say. That's all I'm going to say. If I go any further, I might get murdered.
Oh, nice.
Speaking of murder, I sent you that story about Arturo Gatti. I don't know if you got that.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to read it yet. I saw that you'd sent it to me. Once again, but another crazy week of work, and I want to slap a few people.
Well, we'll talk about that next week, since we got a few more boxing events here to cover before we get Joey Abel on the line. We also have Jimmy Lang as a card on in Virginia. He's got his own fight, the main event, a light middleweight fight. And I'll tell you, don't bet on his opponent. Because the last fight I think he made myself, he got disqualified for holding. And just did not fight, period. So he's fighting in the main event against the guy who's promoting the show. I wouldn't bet on him.
Yeah.
Jimmy Lynn, 31-4, 22 knockouts, and this guy's got the perfect name for a guy who's going to be an opponent for the rest of his life if he fights the same way.
Is he a pumping bag?
Nope, that's the MMA guy. This is Jimmy LeBlanc. LeBlanc, even though he does have some wins, he's not 0 and something. He's not the epitome of his nickname. But he's 12-16.
I've seen Jimmy LeBlanc before.
And he's lost his last four fights. And, I don't know if he's going to be any better than he was the last time I saw him, but if he isn't, God help anybody watching that main event. Kevin McBride, as we mentioned, he's got his fight Saturday night, 8-round heavyweight fight. He's fighting Zach Page, who's 20-29 with 2 draws and 7 knockouts.
Hopefully for McBride, Page won't bite him on the nipple like Tyson did that time.
McBride is 34-6 with 1 draw and 29 KOs. That's about it until next week for boxing. So let's jingle up our first guest and only guest, I should say. Joey Minnesota Ice Abel. See if he's ready, willing, and able to be interviewed.
Oh, Rich, that was good. That was such a good pun.
You know, it was kind of, everybody did. Anyway, special thanks to our good buddy Yano for hooking this up, by the way.
Oh, so you talked to Yano earlier. How's he doing?
He declined an opportunity to be on the show himself, which makes me believe he's grown up quite a bit since we last talked to him.
why is it he's grown up? That he doesn't want to talk to us anymore?
No, that he's... He's all about his fighters, you know. He's a businessman now. He's got no time for putting his own name out there. He wants to get his own fighters that he's doing knockout publicity for. That's what he calls his company. So,
The one thing I always remember about him was one of the first time I ever really met him in person was down at a fight card in down the arena in Philadelphia. It was known as the New Alhambra at the time. And it was the first fight of the night. He came over, and he was managing Jonathan Reed that night. And so he's there, and he's in a suit and tie and everything. So he comes over. He's sitting with me and my dad. We're talking. It was the first fight of the night. There's a kid from Philly pro debut and a kid from Virginia pro debut. And everybody's like, oh, there's a kid from Philly. You know, he's a hometown kid. He's probably going to win this fight, whatever. And they're like, no, man, this kid from Virginia. I remember somebody... It was there that knew him. He's like, this kid had over 100 amateur fights. He's a Golden Gloves champ. He's pretty damn good. So this kid from Philly is, you know, getting whipped by this kid from Virginia. The kid from Virginia was just boxing the living shit out of him. Second round, he hit the kid from Philly with a 3-punch combination. The first punch, the kid was out cold. The second 2 punches put him down and out. But Yana's sitting with me and my dad there. He's like, I got to go. We're like, where the hell are you going? He goes, I'm going to go, when this kid from Virginia is getting out of the ring, and I'm going to try to sign him on the spot.
Yeah,
it was just funny as hell.
About business than anything else.
He's definitely about business. Now, because he was on that series, that boxing versus MMA debates, I did that before I was even the co-host of the show. That's when Hella Holly was still the co-host, and I forget the name of the guy that I debated. But I tried to be, you know, cordial and everything. I tried to be nice. You know, I didn't,
Tom Molesky?
What?
Tom Molesky, if I remember correctly.
That,
came out of my head.
Was that the guy I debated? I don't remember. But, I remember he was a kind of quiet. He didn't say a whole lot. Most of the talking on the show was me, you, and Holly.
Right.
And this guy didn't say much at all. But I remember talking to Yano, and he was like, the guy he debated, he was like, I just jumped on him all over as soon as we started. And I just blasted the hell out of him. And I was like, and I remember you telling me about it. You're like, yeah, he just jumped. I didn't even tell me. You're like, be a little bit more cordial than he was, please.
Yeah, another guy that does a lot of business now, more so than getting on the radio himself, is a guy that we had on a few months ago, Ryan Sangalia. No, he's like almost a couple
of years. Oh, sure. I remember Ryan. I would always talk to him about, well, MySpace. We always, because he used to have always, I was little fight knockout videos on there to watch. I gotta befriend him on Facebook.
He's got that Facebook group that I'm subscribed to. He's always sending stuff out for us, so he's got the right idea.
What's
up with the Facebook now? You got everything that you sign up for in the social marketplace. It seems you have an option of signing in through Facebook now. Have you seen this?
Yeah, I do see a lot of that.
How do they do that? That's bad.
I know you and my one friend keep trying to get me on Twitter. I'm still not sold on Twitter yet.
Mike Tyson's on Twitter. You got to be on Twitter.
Okay, that's it right there. I'm going to sign up now. My one friend wants me to sign up because he signs up as soon as something comes out, he signs up for it so he can, register his domain name,
yeah,
which is his first initial last name. Now, for me, on MySpace, Facebook and YouTube, I have two MySpace pages, which one was like my personal page, and then one was when I started with Fight News Unlimited that created a Fight News Unlimited page. So my personal one for all three of them is Tornado TP. Very imaginative, right there. And so he's like, no, you got to sign up for Twitter so you can get Tornado TP.
Well, I have 482 followers on Twitter right now. And I've
2,819
tweets.
That's not bad. My friend also wanted me to sign up for something called Google Voice. I don't know if you ever heard of that. Where you can register a phone number that would would ring into your cell phone. So I would give you a number to call me, but it wouldn't be my actual cell phone number. It would be another number, but it would link to, I don't know how it works, but he figures all that shit out. I never did. But he's like, no, you have to register your number. And my number's 215-4-Kevin-G. I'm like, well, the word tornado is seven letters. That could be 215-tornado. Oh, my God, you got to do it. You got to sign up. I'm like, I'm not signing up. 215-tornado would be cool, but I'm not doing it.
Well, if you want to add Mike Tyson on your Twitter account, if you ever get it, go to twitter.com/Mike Tyson, and he's also at facebook.com/Mike Tyson. So
that I might add.
There you go.
Dude, how would you feel if I got Tyson? How would you feel if I got Tyson to do an interview with us?
That'd be sweet. But he's a pacifist,
yeah,
so he won't want to talk about fighting. But never mind,
Well, can we talk
about
the hardest
interview to get. I mean, the only person he's had an interview with is that documentary guy and Oprah in the last...
Yeah, but he would like us.
Smack, so...
Yeah, but he would like us.
He would like
us. I mean, I could talk about some of his great things, but...
No, who could
the
get
appearance
him?
Of WrestleMania 14.
Yeah, would be the woman down there in New York that we used to talk to a lot, who told us that Shane Mosley was Nick's greatest gift to the welterweight division.
Well, I got many things we could talk to Tyson about. I mean, listen to some of these options. We could talk about his appearance as the referee in WrestleMania 14. We could talk about what it was like for him to train at my gym where such prestigious people such as me trained. And we could also ask him about the hangover, of course. We could also ask him about any recipes he has for cooking children.
No, chicken soup for children. That's what he does.
Chicken soup for children.
Six children.
Sounds good to me.
Anyway, let's get our guest on the phone, Joey Abel. He's probably waiting.
Are we ready for some ice, baby?
I'm not even going to justify this, the audio. But that would be funny if we had it.
That would be funny.
You're just going to have to sing it on your own when he answers hello.
Hello? Yeah.
Joey, how's it going?
I'm doing good. Who are we talking to here?
This is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron, and we got Tony the Tornado Pentacal on the line from Fight News Unlimited on Fight Talk.
Oh, nice. Nice. How you doing?
Hey, what's up, Joey?
How you doing, brother?
Doing good. Doing good. I've seen you down the Blue Horizon a couple times.
What's that?
I'm actually a Philly guy. I've seen you play in the Blue Horizon a couple times.
Oh, okay, nice. Yeah, how you doing?
Doing well.
Good, excellent. I'm not able to hear very well here, so bear with me, will you?
All right.
Okay, no problem.
Try to keep the mic close to the speaker here. Tony's coming through on a speaker, so that's probably why I'm up to here. But, Joey, tell us about your next fight here. Looks like you got two of them in the works, one on the 17th and one on the 24th. So what's going on with that?
Yeah, I'd say the 24th, you know, that's one that's been in the works for quite some time now. It was originally supposed to be for January, but it keeps getting postponed, and it's in Uganda, you know, and you got to get all these shots to go there, and I haven't got them yet, so I'm not going to get any of them before a week before our fight, just, you know, because of how they might affect me. So I would say that one's probably not going to happen at the time that it's supposed to happen.
And you're fighting that guy we used to always talk about, and, you know, he's got such a great record, but his TBA.
Yeah. Yeah,
have
exactly.
An opponent for you, and it's 2 weeks away, so yeah, I can understand why you go to Uganda.
No, yeah, I think the thing there is they had a big issue. You know, they had high hopes for what might have been able to do, but then it came time to either put out or shut up, and it was kind of they weren't able to come through on it. So I think they're just going to keep postponing it until it's something that they can handle.
All right. Well, what about this rematch here with Aaron Lyons? You get a bone to pick with him, don't you?
I do. You know, I don't really ever feel like this when it comes to a fight, because most people I fight, you know, and they accept that they got beat, or, you know, and if I get, you know, any other, I lost four times, regardless of the reason, like I lost four other times, or I mean three other times, and this particular one was. It's kind of personal because, you know, he it got stopped, and he came out and kind of attacking my integrity with all the I'm not very good, and I was just easy to beat and this and that. So I mean I'm really looking forward to it.
All right. Well, you fought him way back in 2006, so you've had almost four full years to get ready for this rematch. What's different about you since that fight?
Well, you know, I've grown quite a bit when it comes to my experience in the ring. You know, at that time I was knocking everybody out in the first round. Not a whole lot of boxing skill, just, you know, a combination of athletic ability and power. You know, I just go out there and kind of overwhelm people until they went down. And this particular time, you know, they were telling me that I needed to go some rounds, so. I caught him in the first round with a right hook, and he staggered a little bit. So I'm like, okay. Most of the time, I just jump on that opportunity and finish the fight, you know, and get paid and go home. But I backed off a little bit. He was still, you know, he was dazed a little bit, come out swinging, and at that point, I didn't have the experience. You know, I'm back up in the corner, playing the defensive role. And he's swinging, and I'm not answering back. You know, he did. I'll give him credit for it. He did catch me a couple of times. There's no doubt about that. And if I was smart, I would have just took a quick knee, or threw some back. But I didn't. I would just figured I could just wait until he's done punching, and then come back at him. But I didn't. I didn't throw back, and they jumped in and stopped it. So I mean, it was a learning experience for me, and the three other losses that I had were. Complete learning experiences for me. Every one of them, I learned a different.
One of them was your only decision loss. There was a split decision that you lost by a true whisker. There, 2 points on one card, 1 point on another card. So, I mean,
yeah.
Thing is, Alfred Cole, who had a quite a good record at the time, over 34 wins he had.
Yeah, he was a tough guy. You know, at that point we were fighting in Sweden, and that was 6 2-minute rounds. And the whole time we're coming up to that, you know, I'm training for, you know, 10 3-minute rounds, and I mean, I'm not anything I'm saying right here. Don't take it as an excuse, but
I wondered. I never talked to anybody who fought over there, but I always wondered if that was what they meant by times two there.
It's a little different, you know. But when you go out there swinging, regardless if it's 1 minute rounds, you know, you're swinging. At that point, I wasn't swinging. I was trying to play it smart. You know, we'd tie up. And I wasn't punching, and he was when they were tied up. You know, just little pot shots here and there, and he definitely landed more punches than me, because probably 90% of the punches he threw, I didn't think they counted. I knew they counted. Now that I think about it, but after the fight, I knew they counted. But during the fight, I'm like, well, these aren't doing anything. The judges, are gonna, you know, they're a lot of power shots and this and that, which I definitely want to more of. And that's a, but he knew he was doing.
Well, since then you fought a lot of guys. You haven't lost since 2008, and it looks like you have an average, according to BoxRec, of a little over 2 rounds per fight for all your 32 fights.
Especially after that fight, you know, I'll take the rounds when it comes to the experience and getting in the ring and going as many rounds as I can. I'll go as many rounds if I'm gonna knock somebody out in the first round, I'm gonna knock them out in the first round. I'm not gonna take any chances, because when it comes to the heavyweight division, it doesn't matter who you fight. One of the other losses that I had, you know, I was beaten up on them for 3 rounds, and I relaxed a little bit. My hands went down and he caught me with a haymaker, you know. So anybody in the heavyweight division can knock you out. It's just a matter of if they catch you.
Uh-huh.
Oh, absolutely. I started working with Rich on Fight News Unlimited about 3.5 years ago, and one of the actually the first fight I covered. I've been a Philadelphia resident my whole life and been in boxing for almost 20 years now as a fighter, as a training some guys, working, doing the reporting. And you fought on the first card I covered down at the Blue Horizon. I'm trying to remember the guy's name. I think it was
Dan Gamber. You can't remember. It was either Dan Gamber. That might have been the first guy I fought there. It was either like a taller white kid.
Oh, no. It was a short, heavier black guy. And knocked him out of the ring.
Oh, yeah, okay, I gotcha. I can't exactly remember the particular fight either, but I remember that happening.
Yeah, I think his name was Ellis, because you had knocked him out of the ring twice. It was like in the second and the third round, and I remember that, because then they stopped the fight, and then he was pissed off when it was over, and he was saying, everybody in the crowd was even yelling at him, like, what are you pissed off at? You got clocked with a left hand, you tumbled out of the ring, and that is what you got hurt, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, that was kind of a brawl, and that was kind of cool. You know, everybody's gonna have their reason. You know, nobody wants to fight stop, especially when they're going out there for something to prove. You know, and if they don't get knocked completely out, they're gonna have some type of excuse about it. You know, including, you know, me too. I'm not if I don't get knocked completely out, I get kind of upset about it too. But I try not to make any excuses.
And I don't know how where you are this, but actually you've been a footnote in a several Philadelphia newspaper stories recently, and I don't know if you know the situation. I was telling Rich about it earlier when he told me you were on the line tonight. But there was a fighter you knocked out a couple of years ago. It was his last fight, by the name of LaVon Warner. You knocked him out in the first round. He is on in trial right now for the murder of a police officer in Philadelphia, possible facing the death penalty.
I did know that. And the only reason I knew was because, you know, I knew there was a rumor around that he was trouble or whatever, but I knew it because I think his attorney called me up. He didn't call me up, but he emailed me, or she, I don't know exactly which one it was, but and they said they wanted to need to call him back and talk to him about something, but I didn't know exactly. You know, I didn't never got around to doing it, but I didn't know what am I?
Say that you gave him brain damage when you knocked him out.
This is cornerstone. The one picture when this first happened, I guess, was about 2 years ago or a year and a half ago when they murdered the police officer. When they were talking about the three guys that were involved. The one guy was killed on the spot in a shootout at the police. The other two guys were arrested. And they were talking about LaVon Warner being a former boxer, and the picture they had of him in paper was against you, showing him on the canvas.
No, really?
And that was part of, like, his last fight, because then they were saying, like, which his manager was telling him that, you know, maybe it's time for him to hang it up. And actually, between his last fight with you and before the, you know, obviously unfortunate incident with the police officer, he was working construction, and my dad, being an electrical lineman, they were working on the same job together. I was like, I was eating lunch with the guy every day. We would talk boxing every day. And then, you know, this guy's, you know, murdering a cop and going to jail and now possibly facing a death penalty.
Well, you know, when you, when you kill a cop, and I mean, not to mention when you kill somebody, you got to pay for it. You know, and if he did it, you know, I feel better about that than knocking him out. And you know, it's unfortunate that first of all, it's unfortunate that he's a boxer because you know, in some aspect, people are gonna be like, oh, he's a boxer, and you know, he killed somebody and this and that. But you know, it's too bad that all went down like.
Well, just to be clear, he wasn't the one that allegedly fired the shots. He was just part of the bank robbery, right?
Yeah.
Not to dismiss any serious.
I mean, what really upsets me more than anything, first of all, they're using, you know, boxing as a defense for, you know, in his trial. So I know he has brain damage from boxing. But it makes, I mean, not just the sport of boxing look bad, but it makes the people involved in the sport look bad. Because maybe some people that are just reading the article for the first time, oh, this guy's a boxer now, and he's charged with killing a police officer. Well,
you're not going to get yourself, you know, if you think about it, you're not going to get yourself into a situation like that where you're going to be, you know, even not anything like that even being close to happening if it's not in their mind originally to get, you know, I don't know exactly what he was doing or why he was doing it, but it wasn't, it had nothing to do with brain damage to why he would go out and, I don't know, was he robbing a bank or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, they were robbing a bank. They dressed up like women.
What?
And they had like the Muslim face veils, and that way they could disguise, you know, look like women. And they actually held up a taxi. Then they went to rob a bank, used the taxi as their vehicle, and the cop happened to, you know, just be in the wrong place for a long time, really. And they had a high-powered assault weapons with them, and it all went down faster than anybody could think.
You know, it's all or nothing when it comes to, unfortunately, it's all or nothing when it comes to doing things like that. It's too bad.
Yeah, it always catches up with you. One day or another. Anyway, getting on a better subject, how did you first get into fighting in the first place? And one question I wanted to ask earlier, but might as well throw in here now. How did you develop this knockout punch of yours, considering you've only got one decision win?
Yeah, I got into it when I was at a young age because I didn't have much self confidence when it come to, you know, I'd always be, you know, in school mainly because I didn't have a whole lot of friends to, I didn't have a social life at all when I was younger, just because we lived out kind of growing up we lived out on a farm, you know, kind of a farm out in the middle of nowhere, and I didn't have a whole lot of social life. So when I moved into the cities in third grade, I was just another kid, but I was a kid that didn't say anything, and I was kind of a magnet for the bullies because they could do whatever they wanted to me. The only thing I would do was kind of try to laugh it off, but I wouldn't defend myself at all. So my dad thought it would be good for one reason or another to throw me into the gym and just get me working out. You know, in the first couple of years, when I was 9, 10, like that, I'd just go there and mess around, play around, think it was fun, do what I was told. And this and that, but then when I, you know, they throw me in the fight, you know, it'll just be a, just punch until the bell rang. You don't get tired at that age, and I won most of those, all but like one or two when I was up until I got old enough to go into the tournaments, and I didn't fight all the time. I wasn't like a hardcore boxing guy. When a fight came up, I don't know. Yeah, I probably had 25, 30 in my fights. Before the age of 20, so before the age of, probably about 18, when I went into a couple tournaments, and because of my athletic ability, I was able to jump around the whole time and throw shots, but I didn't have any power at that point, but I still won a lot of fights, and then I went to college, played football for 5 years, gained 50 pounds of muscle, and fought a couple Upper Midwest tournaments, and I figured out that it was easier to get the fight, you know, instead of just not getting hit, just staying in there, throwing a couple punches, using using what I worked hard to get, you know, the strength, and it worked for me, and I just started knocking people out, and then I turned pro, and I just went from there with that mindset.
Do you have a particular punch that you knock most guys out with, or is it just you got power?
Any one of them, you know, any one of them are dangerous. If I throw them and land them. Just like any heavyweight, I suppose.
I was going to suggest, from watching you a couple times, I was going to say there's a big left coming over the top. Because I was able to pull up your record, and that's what put Cornelius Ellis out of the ring.
Yeah, that was kind of a good fight, you know. It's just to come forward, you know, just come forward and get the especially at the Blue Horizon, though, they get you going a little bit. They're fight fans. They know what they're doing. They get you going. You just keep swinging and try to fight over.
And that's, I mean, from what I heard, and I publish their stuff all the time. I get them on their mailing list, so they're very loyal with their regular events to the sport, you know. So they've been around for a while, too. As Tony knows, they've been there for many a fight, right?
Yeah, I've been there about a good 50 or so times, covered fights, and I love sitting in the first row of the balcony. That way, I mean, sitting in the first row of the balcony, you can talk to the fighters in the ring, which is, you know, a lot of fun. What was that like for you? I mean, I'm looking at you right now. Like, a lot of your first fights, you know, small towns in Minnesota and Iowa, coming to a place completely like a legendary venue for boxing.
That was kind of a big deal for me, you know, and it was really kind of overwhelming at first because it was like in the beginning of my career, and I wasn't used to anything like that. I was always used to getting in front of big crowds when it came to football, but it was never the only time you'd get recognized. You know, everybody recognized you there is when you made a play. So I mean, when it came to going to the Blue Horizon, and regardless of how many people were there, you know, they were right there, and it was a little bit overwhelming, but at the same time, it was. It pumped me up a little bit, you know. I was looking at it as, and I don't want to let these people down. I know what they want, and if I do what they want, they're gonna be on my side. So, the Blue Horizon fight is one of the best places I ever fought.
Well, that would explain why you went back there so many times to fight.
What's that?
I said that would explain why you went back there so many times to fight.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I think they got the old the Rocky store going with me, you know, the hard nosed come forward type guy, except for I didn't get his as many times as he did.
Yeah, definitely not.
I mean, like I said, from being down so much, and I've had a lot of guys that I've trained with fight on those cards. Probably some of the guys that I've trained with fight on the same cards as you, actually. Your first fight at Blue Horizon. Looking at now, first a knockout over a guy by the name of Dan Jamber. The referee right there, Gary Rosado, was a guy that he actually took me under his wing when I was first starting in the amateurs, you know, 15 years ago. But the one thing I always like about the Blue, it's like just where the locker room is, if you're coming out, if you're right involved with the crowd, you walk almost through the crowd to get to the ring, and you walk out of the locker room, the beer stands are right there, and the guys are high-fiving you and stuff. I always love that because you feel like you're, as a fan, you're part of the show, and you, as a fighter, you know, you can really feel a good connection with the fans.
Yeah, they're all looking at you when you come out, and they're all touching you, and it's not so bad coming out of the ring, but when you're going in, you're trying to focus, you know. There's a certain feel about it, but some people, you know, you can use it to your advantage, or you can let it get to you a little bit. But I use it to my advantage. I was happy that I could be part of their crowd. And yeah, it is the most unique venue I've ever seen.
And the one thing I always say about it, like, say, growing up, born and raised in Philadelphia, and of course, you know. The lot of fights that they had over the years, the Spectrum, and a lot of, you know, the great fighters, the Joe Frazier's and the Bernard Hopkins and the Gypsy Joe Harris's, so on and so forth. A lot of legendary fights in the city of Philadelphia. It's, to me, it's a very knowledgeable crowd. You know, as we were discussing earlier, Rich and myself, it's like a lot of people say, like, boxing is on the decline. It's not what it was. And I tell people, no, no, no. go to a fight card in Philadelphia, and you will see the boxing's not on the decline. Because these people that are there, they're not there to, you know, show off. They're there to see fights. And when you're there, there's a lot of passion going through that place. That's why I always felt like anybody that gets a chance to fight there always wanted to come back.
I always did. You know, it was my second home. Obviously Minnesota, it was my second home. It was my home in the first majority of my fights, because you know everybody there knew me. I'd get emails, I'd get this and that from just regular boxing fans over there. Every single fight, I'd order the fights and just to try to learn from what I did, and I'd see the same people, same spots every time I fought there. Yeah, it's a great place.
I actually saw one of Tony's buddies down there in Philadelphia come to Boston for a fight one time last year, I think it was, Hammer and Hank Lundy. And he almost got into a fight with the other guy's trainer after the decision. And he yelled out right in the middle of it, the standoff after the fight, because the guy kept yelling at him, "You lost that fight. You didn't win that fight." And so Hank said, "I'm from Philadelphia. I'll fight you right now."
You know, people get on our case and everything, you know, you guys, this is good, if you guys nasty, you're mean, you're this and that. I'm like, hey, it's because what we do, we care about. We put 100% into everything. There's no BS with us. There's very much. I think that's the reason that we felt a connection with you in Philadelphia, and that's why, like I said, I went down to see you on a couple occasions, and like I said, I even covered one of your fights, was the fact that Philadelphia is very much a blue-collar town. You know, we appreciate it, if somebody goes out there and they give them a poor performance, yeah, we're going to be tough on them. And I'm talking about any sport, baseball, football, hockey, anything else. But we like guys that can put on a show. And that's the one thing we liked about you, because you came straight forward, and it was, yeah, there was no bones about it. It's coming in, let's throw it down, and let's see who walks out of the ring, and let's see who gets carried out of the ring.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't like the idea of getting carried out of the ring, so I tried to keep it on the other end of that one.
Well, you were the guy that was doing the walking out most of the time, so that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, what's your ultimate goal with this sport, Dakar Boxing?
My goal is to become a champion, and there's a lot that goes into that. I'm doing what I can right now to make it happen. But I know, you know, that's the goal to a lot of boxers. So I mean, it's my goal, but it's not going to be like I'm not going to be 35. You know, I'm not going to fight for that many years. I'm gonna keep fighting as long as I'm going up. If I take a couple steps back, that's fine. But if I start just falling, slipping, you know, I'm just gonna give that up and pursue a different career. But my goal right now is as long as I'm moving up, is to keep working the way I should be working to become a champion. And then if it all goes my way, I'll be the next champion of the world.
All right. Well, being as I spent some time in New Hampshire, I'm a big fan of ice myself, so I like your nickname, Minnesota Ice. How'd you get that?
How did I get it?
Yeah.
Did you say? It was my manager. One of my managers came up with it. You know, right away they're telling me that I need a nickname, and I'm not. You know, I pick out the dumbest names. I don't even like half the names that I come up with when somebody puts me on a spot like that. You know, I'm not that creative like that. So my manager came up with that one just because, you know, it's a unique. Somebody coming from Minnesota. It's cold in Minnesota. Everybody knows that, and it's kind of a cool name.
Out there?
What's that?
Do you do any ice fishing out there? That's my big sport.
I do plenty of ice fishing, yeah.
Nice.
It's what Minnesota do.
Yeah. Actually, I heard there's a fish out there that you guys have, like, coming out of your ears, but up in New Hampshire, it only comes out in the winter. Uh, they call it cut, New Hampshire, but down there they call them eel cow.
Eel cow, yeah.
Festivals.
Those scary-looking things.
Yeah.
First time I caught one of those things, I wrapped around my arm three times, and I'm thinking I caught a snake or something like that.
Yeah, it's a nasty-looking fish. I caught one that's like, same species, but probably a little bit smaller than the ones in the big lakes out there. But up in New Hampshire, you catch them in the winter through the ice, and it was the first big fish I caught through the ice, and it was a 5-pounder in one of the deepest parts of the lake that I was fishing in. It's like the biggest lake in New Hampshire called Wetaposaukee. And, man, the thing looked like a sea monster. I'd never seen one before. I was like, what the hell is this? But they're so easy to catch because you just jig for them. You're not supposed to, but you jig for them, and they're bottom feeders, so they just, people talk about catching 30 of them in one night. I never did that, but apparently they can be that easy to catch. Catfish.
They eat whatever comes in front of their mouth. So if you have the right place, the right time, you catch as many as you want. But around here, pal, not a whole lot of people know there's good meat in those things.
I heard the best thing to do is make a chowder out of it. I made a chowder out of mine, and it tasted good.
I don't know how to cook. I usually, leave that to my mom or something like that.
Yeah, but look up the cusk and look up. You'll see the pictures. The same thing as the eel pounds, as they call them. But
not to mention, not many girls will touch something that looks like that.
Yeah, right. But surprisingly, the way you cook it is you just boil the meat right on the fish. You cut the head off and the tail off, and you boil the meat, and it comes right out of the bone. There's like one backbone. That's it. The whole backbone piece comes right out of the fish. So it's pretty nice. I've only caught a few of them over the years, but I could always catch them when I tried. So every time I made a chowder out of them, they said the only other way to do it was fry them, deep fry them. And I tried that. It didn't taste right, so I stuck with the chowder.
Next time I catch one, I'm going to lay one in my girlfriend's bed and see what she says about it.
Right, there you go. Put it in the on the pillow of your next opponent. Go to his hotel room for the fight.
Send it to Aaron Lyons.
Doorstep. All right. Well, anyway, get back to boxing. What's the most important thing that you do to get ready for a fight?
Everything. The most important thing is going more than you think you can go. That's what we've been doing quite a bit lately. I'd be completely done. I think I'm completely done, and then they make me go. And then make me go more. So I think the most important part of the boxing training and all that kind of stuff is pushing yourself and going beyond what you think your expectations are.
And you said you want to be a world title, or you want to get a title. Have you had any negotiations with anybody that looked promising to make that happen?
I don't exactly know, because my managers try to keep that. They discuss that amongst themselves. When it comes to something that might be a big opportunity, they'll let me know about it. They'll try to figure out what I feel about it. But being the way I am, and I'm in the best shape of my life, I think I can just jump up there and beat one of the top guys. But that's not how it goes. It's not about how I feel about the shape I'm in. I need some more experience. I need more ring time and this and that. So they tend to keep that to themselves, and I appreciate it. But I trust that they're gonna bring that championship to me if I do my part, and I just try to do my part.
All right. Tony, you got a question over there? We call Tony the Rain Man of boxing. He's quiet.
They call me the Rain Man of boxing because I know so many obscure things. All right, the one I pulled out tonight, the fight with Cornelius Ellis. I haven't even read that article. That was my first article that I wrote when I signed up with News Unlimited. just talking about Philadelphia and all that. And the two quick things, I know it's hard because, you're coming in to fight. But the two things about Philadelphia that I got to ask you is, one, did you get a chance to run Art Museum Steps? And two, did you get a real cheesesteak?
Both of them. I've done both.
All right. That's what I like to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah, anybody that comes to Philadelphia, like, but any fighter especially, that's the first thing they got to do is they got to hit them steps.
I've done the steps many times, and, you know, it's not, you know, sometimes it's not about the steps, it's about you think about the Rocky story and what he was going through and what he was trying to achieve and how he achieved it. You know, you think about that kind of stuff when you're going up the thing. So I mean, the first time it was just exciting to be there. You see the statue and this and that, but then you start thinking about it and you think about, you know, all the things. You know, you think about the movie and all the things that he was trying to achieve and how hard he worked for it and where he was coming from and this and that, and that kind of stuff inspires me.
And what I like about it more than anything was, like, as you said, you're running them steps, and you think, and now, granted, okay, the character's in the movie was a fictional character, but, you know, you get the sense of disbelief, and, you know, you can really get the feeling of it because you see a guy coming from nowhere. But what I think is really cool about it is it mirrors the actual Stallone's real story. When he saw that fight between Ali and Chuck Leppner, he had like $106 in the bank account. You know, he was broke as can be. He had nothing. And he saw that fight and it inspired him about a guy that had nothing, that stood up to the best in the world and, you know, gave him a good fight. And, you know, and he's like, okay, you know what, wow, that's an inspiration to me. Let me write a story about it. Let me write a movie about it. And then nobody wanted to buy it. Then they wanted to buy it, but they wanted to put someone else in the lead character. And he's like, no, I wrote this for myself. And they're like, well, you're a nobody. And he's like, I don't care. It's me or it's nobody. And
exactly.
And he, that was the fight, the first fight that he won was right there. And that's just a little thing that turns you into, you know, a great big thing. I mean, they get a kick out of this. You know, I hear it all the time because I'm in Philadelphia, and they had the big debate for years about the statue. Should they keep it at the Art Museum? They had it at the Philadelphia Spectrum for a while because that's where they filmed the first, you know, two fights between Rocky and Apollo. And they wanted to put it back at the Art Museum. And the Art Museum said, no, it's not art. It's a movie prop. And they said, well, come on. It's like Rocky was like the guy that like made these steps. And they said, no, he's not. The steps, and the people in the Art Museum said, no, the steps made Rocky. It's like, you know what?
For sure.
If Rocky didn't run up them steps, it still would have been a popular movie. But without Rocky, I never thought of the Art Museum ever again.
Oh, but no, there's no way.
I'm from Philadelphia. I've only ever been there once. And that was when they were doing the filming of the last movie, Rocky Balboa. They had a lot of you know, people running up the steps, you know, for the ending credits, and I was one of them. They cut me out of the scene. But even for me, it was like I felt such a connection to the movie, being an Italian kid from Philadelphia, going to places like the Italian Market, going to places like the Spectrum. When that last movie came out, I wanted to be in it so bad. They were having a chance for people to go down and just to be extras. And I was in the hospital having my appendix out. And I said, no, I have to go. And they let me out of the hospital 2 days early. And I got my dad to drive me down because I couldn't drive. And I'm standing there in line and in a lot of pain. And the only thing that I was lucky was another kid going to the audition was a guy that I boxed in the amateurs. And we were very good friends. And he was like, yeah, I mean, he goes, you look really bad. I'm like, yeah, I'm in a lot of pain. He goes, I'll take care of you. I'll make sure you're all right. And we walked inside together to give our applications and our headshots in. I had a fight photo. That's all I had, me, my trunks, and my robe. And the woman looked at me. She goes, want to read for a part? I'm like, well, me? I said, I'm a boxer. I'm not an actor. I thought I'd get a part in the gym. She goes, no. We can see you having a speaking role in this movie. I'm like, are you serious? She goes, yeah, we want you to play a thug in a bar. Okay. And I didn't get it. I wasn't big enough. They needed a guy about 6 feet tall and about 250, 260 pounds, and I just wasn't that big. But that was, I mean, that was cool for me because for me it was paralleling the story. They said there was no way I could get out of that hospital early to go to this audition. The doctor said no way, and I talked into it.
Hello?
Hey.
Hello.
Hey, I'm still here.
Hey guys. Yeah, I'm barely here though because I was just leaving the gym. My battery's kind of dead. I don't know if it can cut out or not.
Well, give us your final thoughts, and if there's anybody you want to thank out there, give a shout out to. Shoot before we lose you.
I appreciate you guys having me on. Any other time you guys got any questions, I'll be more than willing to talk to you about it. And I appreciate I appreciate everything you guys are doing for me, you know, publicity wise. There's a lot of people that listen to the radio station, and I'm happy to, you know, talk to you guys to let them know what's going on in my life. So this next fight will be a big one. You guys are going to be hearing about it, and I'm going to be trying to do big things with my boxing career, making the boxing world, you know, bigger again like it used to be.
All right. Well, hopefully you keep up your knockout winning streak, and you know, we'll keep an eye on you, and you know, wish you the best of luck on getting to that championship level and doing your best. And it sounds like you got the right idea the way you train. You have to go a little bit more every day. Think you can do it. That sounds like the right ingredients for a champion. So keep that up, and we'll be watching you.
Well, Joey, if you can hear us, man, best of luck in your fight coming up, and you know, hopefully we see you back in Philly soon. The battery may have conked out on him, Rich. We may have lost him.
Yeah. He's still listed on the call, but I don't know if he can hear us.
Okay, well, if you're listening, Joey, thanks for being part of the show. We'll best of luck to you, and we look forward to hearing from you again.
Yeah, definitely. And that's pretty good.
I enjoy, like, you know, talking to a lot of fighters that I've seen fight live in person, and that's really cool. Like I said, I pulled some of my Rain Man out on you guys tonight, because, like I said, I remembered the first fight I covered. And I'm like, yeah, I think it was got Cornelius Ellis, and I was able to finally get through the box rec, and there it was, Cornelius Ellis, TKO in the third.
Well, let me just say to Mark over in China listening to us, thanks for the compliment. He just said he likes our show.
Oh, right. That's great.
China.
My good friend, Double T, I was talking to him. She was IMing me tonight, and I was talking to her. And she was loving the fact that I was ripping MMA and Dana White because she thinks he's a douchebag. She hates Joe Rogan, so we have a lot in common. So I'll buy TT, if you're listening, I'll buy you a beer at the Italian Fest on Saturday.
Yeah, Mark's been talking to me for years on Skype. You know, he always updates me on his latest job. His first job, believe it or not, was selling grass catchers. You know what a grass catcher is?
Oh, I know what a grasshopper is.
He asked for my help to, you know, find some American companies that might be interested in grass catchers. And it turned out he meant the bags on the back of the lawnmowers. That's what this company is selling. So, it's interesting, guys. Had a lot of Chinese jobs out there that involve sales of weird items. But anyway, getting back to boxing and MMA, we have a lot to talk about that I didn't get to earlier. First of all, M1 Global is sort of turning into M1 Go Broke. That Fedor Emelianenko, their number one guy, has a loss. And he was pretty much almost scheduled to beat everybody he was supposed to face, the way they had him hyped and matched up over the years. But the Strikeforce deal, it seemed like he knew the end was near, the way he was kept renegotiating his contract and putting extra concessions on each fight in his contract until this latest fight. And now he's actually probably going to have to make some concessions of his own, they say, to get another fight with Strikeforce instead of the other way around. But anyway, the word is that 10 days after his loss, his promotional organization, M1, is in disarray, and it's closed down its office in the Netherlands, and also said that some of its investors have cut ties with the organization because of this Fedor loss, and that they've put so much stock in Fedor, literally, because people were invested specifically because the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world was under their command. So now it's looking like they're not going to make that much money in the future if they don't have that number one bargaining chip, so to speak, even though they do have a lot of other fighters. But obviously this guy has overshadowed the whole organization. Whether they're going to survive or not, who knows? But they didn't really have much of a backup plan, so now that he's lost, the people around him are apparently panicking about this, and Fedor himself wants to get back to fighting, but the rest of the people at M1 don't know if they have a business to get back to, according to this article here on MMAfighting.com by Michael David Smith. So check that out. It's a link to the blog. And it's just one of the stories that I wanted to mention before we get to some of the MMA fights coming up. First of all, we want to mention Stars and Strikes, which you can order through our website and go fight live. But we get a little chunk of their earnings if you buy it through us. So might as well support your favorite talk show, Fight News Unlimited. The website, by ordering it through us, just search for Stars and Strikes on our website, and you'll see the stories and the links to buy it on Go Fight Live. And it's a pretty interesting card. I got it right here in front of me somewhere. Here it is. It's this Saturday, actually tomorrow night, Friday, at the Tachi Palace Hotel and Casino. Tachi Palace fights is the league, and it's the fifth event, Stars and Strikes. It's called Razor Rob McCullough will face Isaac DeJesus in the main event. And also David Mitchell versus Poppies Martinez. And War Machine, as we mentioned earlier. This will be his last fight before jail. He's going to fight John Alessio, who's been around. He's been in the UFC, the big name in the sport. And, of course, War Machine has a lot to fight for. This is going to be his last fight in the next, at least, year. So, obviously, there's going to be some fireworks. Anyway, we also have Cole Escovedo versus Michael McDonald, Billy Cooper versus David Kaplan, another UFC guy, not so famous, more infamous in the UFC for his dropout of The Ultimate Fighter. Gabe Rudiger says he's a different guy now, so I've read. He's fighting Lenny Lovato. And we got Stephen Avis versus Joey De La Cruz, and David Bollea versus Cody Gibson, and finally Francisco Laredo versus Drew Bittner. And that's at the Tachi Palace Hotel and Casino in Lemoore, California. And you can watch it live on Go Fight Live through our website, so check that out. Also, we have a new contest that I'm still in the development process of. But if you go to our website and you'll see the little free blog factory emblem on the right-hand side, or you go to our blog about the contest, which I'll be reposting over the next 6 months. The basic concept is we want you out there, if you have a fight site, or if you have a fight site idea, you want to start a new site of your own, like we have here on unlimitedfightnews.com. You know, we've kind of grown into a little network with the other sites. Fightradio.info is starting to get popular, and fightspaceonline.com, of course, is still going strong. If you want to get involved in something like that and you think you can be the next great American fight news blogger, we have a contest we're doing with MMARecruiter.com and FreeBlogFactory.com, which is a very exciting platform, FreeBlogFactory.com. They give you what they say is a $500 value, a free self-branded blog. They make it for you, so it's no excuses. You know, we set you up. We give you everything for free, and, you know, you get the cheapest possible blog you can find, and we'll even be coming out with some blogs that explain how you get get your blog populated with viewers and readers, and how to actually make money off a blog. And the prize package includes a year of consultation, advertising, and search engine optimization provided to you from me. And I've been doing this for 4 years now, just about. So I've made every mistake there is to make, and I've figured it out at this point as well. And we just actually, now that we have a new server, now we're really starting a growth period with the website. That's to this day, I'm looking at the numbers and I'm just seeing it's going through the roof. I mean, we're almost up to 75,000 hits a day on average already. And I just switched servers late June, last few days of June. So that's just early July. Actually, July 4th, we had 78,000 hits that day, I believe. Yeah, 78,871 hits on July 4th, a holiday. So that's a good thing. And you know, we're also trying to get our sponsorship projects going with new companies. We've got 5 new companies that want to sign this year to our VIP sponsorship, so we're working on that. And one of the things that I got in the works, since we have 6 months of a review period to give you a chance to start this blog for our contest, what we're going to do is we're going to try to work with a online university that offers some kind of HTML training or marketing school, and we're going to see if they'll give that as a prize in exchange for some advertising on our site. So that's in the works too. That's we're going to try to work that into the prizes during this 6 month period, where you get a chance to build your blog and start promoting it. And then at the end of that 6 month period, we're going to come in, we're going to look at it, we're going to judge it, and we're going to decide whether it's good enough to get a high rating in each category. There's going to be 10 different categories, and then we're going to take it and we're going to put that score on a list, and we're going to put the top 10 blogs up there, if we have 10, or the top 5, if we have 5, whatever we decide at that point. But we're going to put the top blogs up there for people to vote on, the winner. And it's going to be a combination of the raw score that we give it and the vote that decides who wins. And it's all laid out there on our website, so check that out. And we'll be promoting that all through the month. Also, you can't forget our sponsors. Our main VIP sponsor right now is Discipline. DISSIPLINE.com. That's a traditional way of spelling Discipline. We're going to be doing a lot of work with them, and they just actually have a new sponsored fighter, Jessica Baby Bull Hilger. So I want to give a shout out to Corey and Jessica, and we'll probably be having her on the show. She's from Lancaster, Wisconsin, and fights out of the Valhalla Combat Club. And she's been at it for 2 years training. She's 6-1-1. Is an amateur, and 0-1 is a pro, and she fights at about buck 35, so we're looking forward to finding out more about her and following her career. And apparently there's another guy that they haven't put out there on the website yet, but they got from Massachusetts, so Discipline's got another Massachusetts fighter under their belt that will probably be on our show down the line, so we'll have more about him. I don't have his name offhand, but I'll get it for next week's show. And before we go, I do want to run down the rest of the MMA events this weekend going on, according to Sherdog here. We have, other than Stars and Strikes on the 9th, we have the Next Generation from St. Pete Times Forum in Tampa, Florida, XFC 11. So if you're in Tampa, check that out. Don't know if that's on Go Fight Live, probably not. But King of the Cage is also having an event on Saturday. Tropical Storm, King of the Cage from Lake Elsinore, California. And then down in Australia, which actually it's like in the top 5 of the countries that follow us now. So good on you. Throw another shrimp on the Barbie for us down there in Australia. You know, I don't think I'll ever make it there. But the Uprising's coming to Brisbane. So if you're in Queensland, Brisbane, Queensland, Australia, Impact FC 1 is the league, and the Uprising is happening on Saturday at Brisbane Entertainment Center. And then we go to Michigan. Soaring Eagle Casino is having Extreme Challenge on Saturday. And, of course, you can't forget Japan. We got a bunch of events going on in Japan. Saitama, Japan has Dream 15. Tokyo, Japan has Volume 29 of Tribally. There that is. All on Saturday. And then over in Oregon, at the Spirit Mountain Event Center in Grand Ronde, Oregon, we have Caged Combat by UCS on Saturday. And Sport Fight 28 or something like that, Undefeated, is going on in Georgia, and we're going to have an interview with him tomorrow, hopefully before the show. So it's going to be on fnu.mypodcast.com. Check that out. And we only got 90 seconds and 2 more fights left. So Castelo Branco Gymnasium in Brazil, staff MMA is going on. And over in Okinawa, we have Tenkaichi Super Fight. That's on Sunday. The other one's on Saturday. So, Tony, any final thoughts?
Nope. So I'll see you next week, night before I'm going out to Chicago. So might be a little distracted.
All right. Well, folks, enjoy the fights, whatever you're watching. Boxing, MMA, grappling. There's also a big grappling event we got on our blog. check it all out. Visit our sponsors. Drink Redux is another one. They make the cocaine energy drink there. And KGFX and PrimeAthletics.com. Check them all out and keep visiting UnlimitedFightNews.com for details on our contest and upcoming shows and whatever else you want to find out in Fight News. Thanks for stopping by.
Later.